Hello, and welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your host, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Welcome to Hot for Teacher, a terrible episode title, but one that I like in the context of Spencer being hot on Prezra's trail. This is the episode where Spencer spirals further into addiction as she begins to suspect that Prezra is indeed A. Hannah tries desperately to pull her back from the brink. Shauna is run out of town. Emily proves again that she should not consider a career with the CIA. And Prezra ominously pretends to be out of chickpeas.
Oh, man. This is such a fun episode. It has the drama. It has some of my favorite PLL friendship moments. It had me shockingly shipping Emily and Shauna there for a few minutes, which to the surprise of everyone, including myself. This is just a really, really fun episode. I think it's a really tightly plotted episode. It felt like it moved very quickly. And I'm excited to talk about it. As we did last week, we'll just put in a little warning that we will, of course, be digging into Spencer and her addiction here. So just proceed with caution as we approach that storyline.
Yes. So we start out with Allison at a payphone talking to someone who is about to be revealed as Shauna. Allison needs her to get in touch with someone to get something, but not to tell her anything she can't know yet. Shauna cuts the conversation short as the liars have just walked into the brew. Allison begs Shauna to confirm that she can get it, but Shauna does not respond. Shout out to Shauna for talking on her cell phone in an old-time phone booth. they obviously did that so that there would be a parallel of Allison on the payphone in a phone booth to Shauna in this random phone booth without a phone in it at the brew talking on her cell phone. You do you, PLL. The liars see Shauna and debate whether they can trust her. If Allie does, Spencer and Emily think yes. Hannah and Aria are doubtful.
Aria has a finger for Shauna and not the nice one. I don't think we've ever seen this inexplicable brew phone booth before.
No, and I don't know that we're ever going to see it again.
It seems like something that Johnny Garbage Artist would have been really into.
It may be part of his installation to come.
It might be. So later at the brew, Emily is telling the liars that Wayne should be fine. It wasn't a heart attack. It was just chest pains from anemia. Emily doesn't think that A is Shauna, but Hannah thinks that Shauna might be helping A. Spencer, who is continuing to look extremely rough and super twitchy, is trying to float the idea that A might be someone else. She's clearly trying to draw a line between A and Prezra without fully calling that out on her own. Aria is super weird and sketchy when the topic of Prezra comes up. Aria, of course, denies that she has seen Prezra lately. Hannah notices how weird and shaky Spencer is being and announces that she is cutting Spencer off. Hannah is about to have a breakdown. A has played post office between her teeth. Now it's everybody's kind of switched sides because Emily is on the we have to try to help Allie by figuring out this A thing beat. And Hannah is saying, no, we can't, lest A plant any more messages between our teeth. Hannah gets all of the liars to agree to stop investigating. Spencer, of course, being the most reluctant. You can just tell here that it is killing Spencer to not be calling this out, directly, this whole situation with Prezra.
Yeah, this is a good scene. It does seem like the liars have sort of decided, because they just saw Shauna, that Shauna is maybe their suspect of the week at this time. They had kind of forgotten about her existence for a little bit, but now she's back on their radar. So we have to have a lot of debate about whether it was Shauna who was, going after Emily in the act normal bitch school hack.
Right. Exactly. And I apologize. My cat is having an anxiety attack in the background here of yowling. Oh, so well. we all just might hear him chiming in now and then.
Okay. Okay. to add to the tension of what Spencer is going through.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. So we then cut, and this is again going to be a discussion of Spencer and what she's going through with her addiction storyline here. So fast forward is needed, but cut to Spencer taking still more study aid and having a late night Joe March writing Little Women type montage of investigating Presra via Google. She reads articles about him. She Googles Board Shorts Ale. She studies pages from Allison's diary. It is not clear to me why this has to be an up all night type activity, but okay. It also really shows Spencer's isolation and the way that she has no functional family structure in place because no one is around to notice that she has not slept for days on end. She is startled when she goes to the window and discovers that it's daylight outside. She's still in her somewhat dirty pajama clothes as she texts Andrew for more pills, but he is fresh out. She then calls her own physician, Dr. Griggs, pretending to be Veronica.
Yes. Yeah. I do love the way that they do this montage. Like, it's really, you really get this feeling of like the anxiety of Spencer in this moment. Like that she is just, she's like operating at a, you know, at a 15 perpetually in her mind at this point.
Oh yeah. And that she's like, she's looking at the investigation, like it's become an obsession with her. Like the investigation completely. Is as much what she's addicted to as the drug at this point.
For sure. For sure.
What do you think of her investigative tactics here, which basically seem to just include Googling a bunch of stuff?
You know, I mean, I get that maybe she doesn't feel like she has other options at this point. I mean, it does seem like she's getting some results, but yeah, it seems like, I wonder if maybe if she like knew the depths of sort of the Fitzgerald kind of family like reach, that maybe she'd feel like maybe she'd have more outlets for that. I don't know. What's your feeling on it?
I felt like it was a little bit of lazy writing in terms of what they're trying to show here.
Yeah. What would you have liked to see her do instead?
I don't know. Just more of like the putting the pieces together instead of Googling a bunch of stuff. Like, I feel like she must have thought to Google Board Shorts Ale before this. One would assume.
Sure. Sure. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. It's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. It is a real like writerly shorthand to get across kind of like what she's doing here. So at school, while Presra, they're really, really wanting us to understand this whole like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. And so they really hammer that home by having Presra passing out handouts onto the desks with the title. While he talks to Arya about the supposed break-in at the cabin. This is, of course, from a few episodes ago when the liars got stuck at the Presra cabin and, you know, all had to get their weapons against Travis. Arya, of course, is, like, acting super sketchy, and Presra is seeming to delight in creating another situation where she has to lie to him. Then he pulls some fabulous manipulation, guilting Arya into coming with him to the cabin over the weekend. Arya voices concern about Mike not wanting to be away all weekend. You know, her dad is away in Syracuse. And Presra, you know, he pulls a classic line here talking about how he thought that they were really going to be able to use this cabin and he needs to be there all weekend. Abuse tactics 101 here. Screw Arya's life. Screw Mike. Arya agrees.
Well, yeah. And Mike, who Arya is like concerned, maybe getting involved in a relationship that he is not really ready for. Like, she has like a lot of really legit concerns about what's going on with him right now. Neither of them have any parents right now either. So yeah, he just completely dismisses her concerns as irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hannah is loading up boxes of stuff into her trunk as items that were seized from the Marin house for evidence are being returned. Holbrook helps her and returns a pair of heels that Hannah immediately puts on her feet. He chats her up about mysteries, which Hannah says she is retired from, and he drops a lot of pieces of info about Cece Drake and the paperwork on fugitives, false sightings, personality, etc. Props, Vina, for your suggestion last week that he is grooming her to be a police asset, because that really seems like, otherwise, why is he just bringing up all of this stuff for no reason? She kind of does not take the bait about any of this, and then he tries to sweet talk her with some Arthur Conan Doyle quotes.
Yeah, I'm glad that you saw that too, because it really does feel like he is, yeah, nudging her to be doing some kind of investigative work here.
Well, I think that it's interesting. We're gonna see him interacting with her again later and talking about Spencer. And it's interesting, like, knowing as we do that Spencer is eventually going to be arrested. Like, the next person who's going to be arrested is Spencer. So
that's
it's
true.
Interesting to think, like, at this time, is, like, has Jessica talked to the police? Has anybody been feeding them information that might make Spencer look guilty? That could be why Holbrook is, like, kind of targeting Hannah here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, kind of what is on the mind of the Rosewood PD at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Also, Hannah is just kind of adorable here, as she's like ecstatically putting her new shoes on and everything. It's pretty cute.
Man, this is we've had a good run of episodes. This is the second one in a row that's had no Toby and no Caleb. And it's just so much more enjoyable to watch the liars interacting with one another and being engaged in the mystery. You don't lose anything from not having those guys around. Like, we're just missing like some soggy installments of straight people drama.
Yeah. And I would say even though there does seem to be this weird flirtatious edge with the Hannah Holbrook stuff, it's refreshing to see her interact with a male character who isn't, you know, being telegraphed from a mile away as like, this is the love interest and this is their relationship drama, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also to see her just interacting with a male character without the guy, as Caleb has done so often, trying to control everything that she's doing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Emily is now, we cut over to like the Rosewood Aquatic Center which we've never seen the outside of. I had first thought that Emily was at the hospital, like waiting for her dad. And like Shauna had come there, but no, we're still at school. Emily is approaching Shauna, desperate for info about Allison. This is like a really brilliant move by both Shauna and Allison. I feel they've sort of, you know, they were playing this game of Emily, we need you. Emily, we need you. You're the only one we can trust. And now it's like, oh, you screwed up. You're not, you know, you don't get to know where Allison is. The information line's been cut off here. Emily says that she doesn't want to do snide when Shauna makes kind of a snide remark. Shauna brings up fan fiction, talking about the like the Alley Club, which I thought, wow, a little personal there, Shauna. Emily begs Shauna to tell Alley that she's sorry. Shauna will see what she can do. But you can see completely Emily is back in the Alley web here.
110%. And it really speaks to, I think it speaks to like how well Allison understands the dynamic of Shauna and of Emily and of just the web that she's weaving. Because whether or not Allison has sensed that Shauna might be wavering, which we did see Shauna hang up on Allison pretty quickly earlier in this episode,
right.
Allison is going to be ready with a backup. Like, Emily is going to step right into this role of working to accomplish Allie's mission here.
Good point.
For the fan fiction line, do you think that Shauna ships Sparia or McHastings? Asking for a friend.
I think she probably ships McHastings, but I think that she she might feel a little weird about it since, like, she dated Paige. But, well, now I'm trying to remember when Hannah said she flirts with everyone but me. Did Shauna flirt with Aria? She definitely flirted with Spencer.
She did flirt with Spencer. I don't know that she's flirted with Aria that we've seen.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. So I'll go with McHastings. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just, you know, just wanted to make sure we were on the same page there.
Yeah. On the same page, McCullers there.
Yeah. Okay. So Hannah is talking to Aria about Spencer's increasingly jittery behavior. Aria is, like, blithely unconcerned. Hannah thinks that Spencer is still investigating, and they need to spend some time with her this weekend to talk some sense into her before she pisses A off. Aria is distracted in this discussion because Hannah calls Detective Holbrook Gabe, and so Aria, like, instead of talking about their friend who is maybe in crisis, immediately wants to know more about this Hannah Holbrook connection. Oh, an older man being slightly inappropriate? Tell me more. Aria refuses the option to spend time digging into what's happening with Spencer, saying that she has to do a campus visit to Syracuse with her dad, and that she needs a break from Mike and Mona, who apparently are, like, all slow jams all the time. She is, like, very concerned, apparently, that she is leaving Mike completely unsupervised while she goes to scamper in the woods with Prezra. Fun times. Hannah just kind of shrugs it off and says, well, she'll figure it out on her own. After Hannah leaves, Aria sees Counselor Handsome comforting a crying student.
I love Hannah's line about, like, your dad is in Syracuse every weekend. Like, that feels like a great call out of, like, the way that the show just, like, writes the parents out. But yeah, is Hannah the only liar that remembers what happened the last time Spencer was keeping secrets?
It definitely seems like that is the case. And I, you know, normally I make fun of Aria for, like, not being engaged in the mystery, and that is always true. But I do understand Aria just being kind of overwhelmed here by all of her family commitments and Prezra gaslighting her at every turn. Also, I would like to point out that while her dad is teaching in Syracuse every weekend, this is presumably during the week, and it still seems like Aria is the only one parenting Mike.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. It just seems like she has a lot on her plate right now. And she'll even say later, like, she's like, I'm lying to everybody and I'm kind of exhausted. Hannah worrying over Spencer, though, is very sweet in this episode. And there's definitely this vibe of, like, Hannah is like, I am not losing any of you. And Hannah, really, we're seeing in sort of Spencer's distraction and obsession here, Hannah's kind of stepping up as the leader here. She's wanting to keep her girls safe.
Yeah, 100%. And Hannah has a clear agenda, which Spencer does not at this point have.
Sure. Right. That's a great point. So Spencer, like, stalks the campus until she finds her next target, Brenda, popping pills. I feel like the show kind of fused Brenda with Bridget Wu, because this is, like, the persona of this Brenda character is, like, kind of what I imagine Bridget Wu to be sort of like. Spencer pulls Brenda aside and badly lies about the prescription for her meds being missing in her dad's briefcase, and he's out of town, and she needs just maybe two, or actually maybe five pills just to get her through in case her dad forgets the prescription again. Brenda sees right through this and immediately charges Spencer $50, going through her whole, like, pill loyalty program. Spencer seems surprised, but is told by Brenda that haggling is tacky. So then Spencer hands over the cash. Brenda clearly totally has Spencer's number on this whole situation. Spencer is, like, rounding the corner when Prezra is suddenly there. He tells her that he finished reading her essay and it is subpar/plagiarized. She just is, like, uncomfortable and wants to get out of the situation. She wants to know the grade. He wants to know what's been keeping her busy, saying in a super creepy voice, "You thought I wouldn't figure out what you've been up to." He says that he wants to see her after school, but she announces that she will take the grade. He fully physically corners her further, saying that sloppy work leads to consequences, and I'd hate to see you suffer. Oh, this is so, so creepy. And, like, she knows, you know, she knows that it's creepy. She knows, like, what she believes that he is trying to do at this point. Just the way that he uses his authority to, you know, potentially hold her back after school and have alone time with her and kind of hold her hostage in this way is just, oh, layers upon layers of sick.
It is. It is. And this is another situation where we know that he just saw her buying those pills. Like, he's
right.
Prezra. He has cameras everywhere. He's watching all of them all the time. And, like, whatever you think about him writing the book, Spencer is, a student in crisis. And all of his actions around this are only going to make it worse. It's truly heartbreaking how just no one has Spencer's back here, except Hannah.
Yeah, it really is. And it's also, I mean, what's so creepy about this scene, too, is it's like, you're like, okay, so is he reacting this way based on the interaction at the Hart and the Huntsman, based on probably her computer that he has bugged, based on the fact that he just overheard this conversation? And, like, the answer is, like, all of the above, you know?
Oh, yeah. And the thing I really like about this scene, like, Spencer is not functioning at her highest level in this episode. Like,
right.
She's sleep deprived. She's increasingly strung out. She's, like, becoming chemically dependent. There's a lot going on with her, but even though she is not, like, putting on her, like, best face at this time, she has no intention of trifling with him. She's like, I'll take the grade. Yeah. Like, she says that twice. And so, like, I feel like that's an example of Spencer, like, buckling down on her privilege. Like, I can take this grade. Whatever it is not going to end me. I am not going to be staying after school. I am not going to be doing extra credit with you. Like, I will take this and I will run and I will keep doing what I am doing here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I took a note of this later in this episode, but I, as much as I appreciated how the show kind of took its time with the whole Tobey reveal and all of that, I really appreciate how quickly this storyline moves. And I really appreciate that the show does not waste any time with Spencer, like, really trying to, like, talk herself out of this Prezra thing. Like, very quickly, the show is like, Spencer thinks that Prezra is a creep. Prezra is acting super creepy with her. Like, that's where things are at. And then, like, I really like later in the episode how Hannah and Emily pretty quickly get on board with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
So the next scene is super quick. It's just Arya goes knock on the door of Counselor Hansom. She wants to talk. And then, is it okay if I talk about the next Spencer scene?
Totally.
Since Arya was like a flash in the pan of needing to talk. Spencer is in her darkened bedroom doing more Googling, this time for Ezra Fitz Ravenswood address. Hannah calls from outside with Emily in the car. They want to come in and talk to Spencer. Spencer lies and says that she's at the library, and when Hannah calls her on her car being in the driveway, Spencer claims to have walked. Hannah asks if she could come over later and help tidy up Hannah's closet. Spencer takes a pass, which, you know, normally she's very into having Hannah do a fashion show for her in various stages of undress, but nope, she says that she needs to work on redoing this Fitz essay. Meanwhile, she's Googling Ezra Fitzgerald Ravenswood PA, and her eyes light up like she has found something.
Oh, I love Hannah trying to, like, reach out to Spencer here by, like, this episode is such a good study in how Hannah knows Spencer and, like, what a good observer of human behavior and Spencer behavior Hannah is. Like, she hears the grandfather's clock, so she knows that that means that Spencer is home. The herbal tea earlier was, like, a huge red flag to her. She offers this thing that she's certain Spencer is going to go for of, you know, being able to help clean up the closet. Like, it's such a, it's like she's going through her laundry list of, like, things I know about Spencer.
Yeah, I think that Hannah's detective skills have never been sharper. yeah. than they are here. Like, we don't have Caleb dragging her down, and we don't have Spencer just taking over everything in terms of right. what the investigation is going to be like. So, yeah, Hannah really has a chance to shine here. And I love everything that you just mentioned. And we're going to see more as the day goes on and as Hannah tries various other things to do to confront Spencer. And this is just such a contrast to Alex Drake in the series finale, where just yes. no one can possibly figure out that's not Spencer.
Great point. So Arya is in Jesse's office talking about Mike and Mona, but Jesse calls her out for wanting to discuss herself and her anger with herself. Arya says that she doesn't know who she can talk to anymore. She's lying to everyone about everything. Jesse points out that this sounds very lonely. And Arya says that she can't even be honest with her friends about who her boyfriend is. She worries that her friends might not be supportive given her long history with this guy. Jesse asks why she thinks her friends would disapprove. And it's like a switch is flipped. Arya sits up, bops up. Oh, Mike doesn't have practice. I've got to go. Thanks so much. Never mind. See you later. She practically runs out of there, unwilling completely to get into all of this. And oh my God, this is utterly devastating because, like, this is what the storyline should have been. This is what the storyline feels like it could be. We are being walked right up to the cliff's edge of this whole, you know, story where Arya basically realizes that she has been sort of emotionally held captive by this abusive asshole, and you know, that this could be where they figure it out and where Arya gets out from under this guy and where they put this guy away for good and finally he gets what's coming to him. And yet that's not what's going to happen.
Oh man. Yeah, that would have been so good, especially because like she jumps up like her chair caught on fire. Like yeah. that is the level at which she is not willing to engage about this.
Yeah, it's really something. And it's so clear that it's like, this is just roped off in her mind. Like, this is just do not enter. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Prezra observes her ominously from down the hall. He sees her leaving the office because of course he does.
That's his whole persona. Yep.
outside of Spencer's, Hannah and Emily debate whether or not they're on an actual stakeout as they try to figure out what's going on with Spencer and why she was lying to them. Hannah, of course, defines a stakeout as whether or not there's coffee and donuts, not whether or not they're actually staking something out in the car, which they are. As they are talking about this, they see Shauna coming out of the De Laurentiis house. And we get a nice moment of, like, Emily being like, get down, which is, like, my favorite move of the liars, like, scrouching down, like, 2 inches in the car and feeling like they're now invisible. But Emily starts wondering if, you know, Shauna has gone to see Mrs. De Laurentiis, if maybe Jessica knows more than she's letting on. Hannah is not sold, and when Emily thinks that they should follow Shauna, Hannah refuses. She doesn't give a crap about Shauna. She cares about Emily. And she says, that's why if this has anything to do with Allison, we need to leave it alone. At any rate, Emily does not like spying on Spencer, so they give up the mission and drive off. And again, kudos to Hannah's upgraded sleuthing skills, as she knew that Spencer was home from hearing Spencer's grandfather clock chiming in the background when they were on the phone.
It's really interesting to have a situation where the liars, like, have the opportunity to follow somebody, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that. And I feel like it's so indicative of Spencer not being in the leadership role here, that mm-hmm. Hannah is actually getting to call the shots and that Emily listens to her. I find really fascinating, especially because Emily kind of fell into the role of de facto leader the last time Spencer was out of commission.
Well, yeah. And that Hannah also, like, that Emily listens to Hannah and Hannah listens to Emily. Like, Hannah's yeah. like, no, we're not going to follow Shauna. And then Emily's like, well, I don't really feel comfortable spying on Spencer. So they don't do either thing, which I think right. is really unusual. If it were Spencer, she would just kind of do whatever she wanted to, and the others would be along for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fascinating. You know, it's the whole thing of, like, when Allison left and all of their friendships fell apart, and then, you know, Arya came back and they all came back together. It's like the when one of the liars is in kind of a weird different space, like the way that that kind of refracts in the other friendships is really fascinating, I think.
Definitely agree.
Yeah. So at school, Prezra, who, you know what I was noticing as I was taking my notes is that in this era, I kept calling him Fitz. Like,
yes.
Have you been doing that too?
It's very interesting. Yeah, because he's like, it's part of the Jekyll and Hyde thing, I think.
Yes. Yes. It's like Prezra. When I think of Prezra, I think of like the romance with Arya. But now I'm like, he's Fitz. Like, he's just this like evil Fitz guy. That's so funny that you did the same thing. So Prezra is in another new location, the like student file room. And he pulls Spencer's student file, learning that she takes medication for ADHD. It wasn't clear to me, unless I just missed it, whether they were saying that this was something she had. I think later we get clarity on this, but whether this file was saying that she is supposed to be currently taking this medication or formerly taking it. But Jesse walks in just then, having mistaken this room for the teacher's lounge, and they chat for a minute. Prezra announces that he is having an academic issue with one of his seniors, which is, again, that thing where it's like he can just be hiding in plain sight here, right? He doesn't even have to come up with a lie because he's, you know, a white man with power. Jesse says that the trick is to get students talking, and Fitz, of course, is clearly thinking of Arya and what he seems to be worried Arya might be talking about with Jesse when he asks Jesse about that, about students opening up. Jesse says that they're pretty eager to talk, and it seems that Prezra might be considering putting knives in Jesse's jelly bean jar as he watches Jesse leave and pockets the file.
Oh, man. So much great stuff here. I just feel like Prezra is far and away the best villain. He's the best at playing the villain.
Yes.
And the way that it fits in with the persona that we have seen him exhibit so long, man, it's everything. He's so good at it.
It works really, really well, for sure.
Oh, okay. So Shauna arrives at Emily's doorstep. We get like a lot of people like creeping around houses in this episode. Like Emily like kind of knows someone is outside and she's investigating. And then, oh, surprise, it's Shauna. Shauna is on the doorstep saying she needs help. She doesn't want to talk on the porch, so Emily lets her come inside. We see a camera lens and someone taking pictures of the two of them from a nearby car. That's going to be a theme. Like, we're going to see that someone is taking pictures of everybody and emailing them to Prezra, which seems like a strangely complicated way of doing things when he has cameras all over the place, but be that as it may. Inside Emily's room, Shauna takes a long look around. She kind of feels up a lot of Emily's possessions, a snow globe that was the present from Allison, etc. And Emily peppers her with questions about various things, about Paige. Did Shauna want to come between them? What has Shauna been doing on Allison's orders, etc.? Shauna's enigmatic, but she tells Emily enough of what she wants to hear for Emily to trust her. At one point, Shauna asks Emily to sit down because she's making her nervous. And there is also a serious close face watch on for this whole scene. They are standing needlessly close together, which, remember, the scene is happening in Emily's bedroom. But the long and the short of it is that Shauna needs help getting something from inside the De Laurentiis house. She tried earlier when Hannah and Emily saw her coming out. But it didn't work out. It failed because Jessica was so happy to see her that she didn't let her out of her sight. Shauna tells Emily there is a poster in Allison's room, some French thing with twins on it. And so we're led to believe that this is going to kind of go in on the caper. Now, before we get to the next scene, during this rewatch, I have found that Shauna has had more to do than I originally remembered. Although it's all fairly routine, like henchman type stuff, and not super interesting. But sometimes it seems like they write her as if she's done a lot that we like never saw or something. Like when Emily is like, it just seems like you've always been trying to come between me and Paige. And it's like, Like, because Paige used her one time to try and find out info about the costume shop, or, like, because there were allegedly some text messages between you two that we never, like, that we heard about one whole time in a throwaway line of dialogue, like...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, when Shauna is like, I saw a button and I pushed, like, she's like a Bond girl or something, and it's like, none of us know what that button was or how she was pushing it, like, that... Yeah, I agree. It's completely the show. It's a completely a telling and not showing thing. I also love the hand wave of like, why were you helping Ren? Well, he placed an ad for me to ship boxes. And like, that feels very much like a Mona bought Jenna's car situation where it's like, we needed a dramatic thing to end the season. But like, don't think too hard about this connection. It actually doesn't mean anything at all, you know?
Yeah, we have a couple of hats on hats on hats, like Spencer and her story about her prescription being in her dad's briefcase and him being out of town. Like, that was very much like hat on hat on hat. And Emily's going to give Jessica a hat situation later yeah. when she's going on about this earring. And this thing with Ren is just like one thing too many. They should have maybe just, I guess, not mentioned it, except that, that we're going to have the A tag in this episode that ties back to Ren. But also like this idea that like, Shauna was trying to come between Emily and Paige, like two characters who are literally so far apart right now that you could fit like a circus tent, five semi trucks parked end to end, the entire ghost train engine to caboose and most of Greenland between them. Like, we haven't even seen Paige since Emily confessed, like, her half-truths about Allison to her. And then now that Allison is alive, I mean, Emily, it's surprising she even remembers Paige's name. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, it's also funny that it's like, Shauna's like, oh, I was, like, the third woman in this triangle. And it's like, Allison has always been the third woman in this triangle. Like, what... I feel like Shauna is, like, casting herself in a role that she was, like, that she hasn't even auditioned for or something. Like, it's very, it's a little strange.
Also, I feel like one of the things, and I like Shauna being a queer woman. I think that that is a strong choice for this character. But it seems like that was really all the work they did on her and her, like, oh, she's a queer woman. And so it just sort of, they're sort of going on the operation, which I guess they do this with Emily a lot, that like any queer women definitely want to sleep with each other because they're both yeah. queer women. Like, so yeah. naturally, like there was Paige and Emily and she was coming between them because then of course, oh, she was like in love with Allison, but then she fell in love with Jenna. So like, oh, this all happens. Like, it really just seems like they feel like as soon as two queer women meet, they are either going to fall in love or become in a love triangle for the love of a third queer woman, not in evidence.
Well, I agree. And I also feel like this whole thing with Shauna would make so much more sense if the show explicitly had it be that she and Allison had been in a relationship. Like, I know that that's like heavily implied and like it's like implied that she was in love with Allison, or if the show let Shauna, like, verbalize that she was in unrequited love with Allison. Like, one of those two things needs to happen.
Right, right. Or if Shauna had tried to, like, honeypot Emily in some way. Like, if Emily had cheated on Paige with Shauna or something. Like,
sure.
Again, I feel like there are ways... It was just, but like, they just write it as if maybe all these things have happened, but we've never seen evidence of any of them.
Right. And I agree with you about the whole like, oh, they're all queer, so they're sort of just like all like nebulously into each other thing, because it's not even really clear who is supposed to have feelings for who in this like Allison, Shauna, Paige, Emily, Jenna situation. It's just like there's just sort of this like light sheen of queerness over all of it that's never really investigated. And everybody like other than like I feel like Jenna and Allison are both sort of so ambiguously bisexual, and the show kind of refuses to like commit to that. And so it's all just like, it's all kind of weird. But I will say that Shauna as a character has been around for like a season at this point. And this is the first episode where I legitimately shipped her with Emily, where I actually thought that there were some vibes that I could get into.
Agreed. Agreed. But you know, what's funny is that both of them, like, they're both like very intensely focusing on Allison right now. Like, they're both like vibrating at the Allison frequency here. So of course they're like more drawn together, I think.
It could have been really interesting though, if, you know, if Emily had broken up with Paige, or maybe not, maybe if Emily had actually cheated on Paige, and it was this kind of like thing where it was kind of a, like in the L word situation when Dana dies, where it's like, you know, Shauna and Emily are kind of bonded through their grief and love and obsession with Allison, and they end up sleeping together. Yeah.
Right.
That doesn't happen though. Oh man, I get to talk about one of my favorite scenes of the whole series. I'm so excited. So it is morning time at the Hastings house. Spencer has clearly been up all night. Her search of Ezra Fitzgerald in Ravenswood, she's found a listing for the Ravenswood apartment. She kind of looks at it. She picks up her phone. She calls Aria's voicemail. Aria doesn't pick up. She says, "Hey, Aria, I know it's early, but something's been going on, and I really have to tell somebody about it. I really have to tell you about it. But if I'm right, then that would just break your heart. And if I'm wrong, then you're going to hate me forever. And that would really, really break my heart. If you could just give me a call when you get this message." And Spencer has the option to delete or re-record. She deletes the message. She hangs up. Oh, man. This scene. This is a classic Spencer would rather break her own heart moment. And what I love about this, I mean, I've talked about this scene before, but what's so great is, like, Spencer is always operating from the standpoint of knowledge is power, right? You know more than you can do more. And it's always better to know more. It's always better to have the answer. And here she believes she has the answer. And it's absolutely the wrong answer, because it's an answer that is going to hurt Aria so much and is going to mean that basically Aria's whole, like, emotional house of cards has fallen down. But Spencer can't unknow this, even though there's a real part of her that kind of wants to. And it's totally devastating. And how perfect, you know, that we've just learned Aria's nickname as Susie Clueless, when it's like Aria is completely clueless to this whole situation. And the stakes are so high because Spencer can't handle the idea of losing Aria. And, you know, I've watched this scene a lot, but this was the first time when I thought of that scene from, I think, couple of seasons ago between Spencer and Melissa, where they were asking each other that question of, like, if you had to choose between me and somebody you loved, who would you choose? And it's like Spencer, in a sense, is sort of asking that question of Aria here. If you had to choose between me and somebody you loved, who would you choose? And I think part of what makes this whole thing so devastating is Spencer doesn't really know the answer. And Spencer has an answer here to this question of who is A, but it's an answer that she does not know what to do with. And that is killing her. Oh, I just love this scene so much. And I love Troyan's performance of this phone call.
Yeah, Troyan is doing a lot of solo acting this week and has been in the most recent episodes too. And she's just knocking it out of the park here. Like, her love and her torment are just spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, this is one of my favorite moments of the series. It honestly is.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this scene a lot in the context of the Spencer and Aria relationship, especially how, like, you know, this is, the main text is about Prezra, but I think you could read a subtext of, like, a lot of Spencer's own queerness in what she's saying here, especially everything she has to say about heartbreak. But also, like, watching it in the context of, like, these most recent episodes and where the story arc is going right now, we see Spencer, like, using pills in order to, like, keep going and really in order to, like, dissociate from her regular emotions, her regular responsibilities, the regular order of life. And, like, when she's dealing with Hannah in this episode, when she's dealing with Emily, to a lesser degree in this episode, Spencer is like, she's not even really there. Like, she's off in the world of this investigation. This is really the only moment of this episode where we see Spencer coming down enough to be emotionally present for this voicemail. And I think that that's, I think that that's really, really powerful.
Oh, I completely agree. And, you know, I think I've talked about this before, but I sort of also see this moment and this whole storyline as kind of like a metaphor for adulthood, in the sense that, like, Spencer has been sort of forced to be awakened to the manipulations of Prezria. It's like the mask, by her realizing that Prezria might be A, the mask has kind of been lifted. And it's like, no longer can the Prezria relationship just be this sexy little thing that her friend Arya is involved with. It's now this, you know, extremely fucked up, abusive relationship that has perhaps been entirely a lie, and also been heavily involved in sort of the destruction of Spencer and all of her friends, right? And so for her to have to be like, it's like she's being forced to see that. And now the question is, does she wake Arya up to that too? Does she sort of drag Arya into this adult realm as well?
Well, yeah. And like, the idea here is like, who knows what he did to Allison, or what he's trying to do to Allison? Who knows what he could do to Arya? Who knows what he could do to Spencer? Like, there's literally no telling.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. There's so much that they don't know about this man. And yeah, it's just a really stunning bit of work. I love that they let Spencer sort of slow down enough to sit with the revelation of this for a minute.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
If we're through talking about the emotional impact of the phone call, are we?
I think so.
Oh, okay. I just want to talk for a minute about the economy of Rosewood, which, you know, is one of my favorite topics. You know, I can't let go of the fact that this studio apartment in Ravenswood that Spencer has found the listing for is a studio for $795. Now, I know that all the writers of this show live in LA, but if you're in the Midwest and you're living in a haunted suburb that is fully half an hour outside a major metro area, that price should for sure get you a bedroom.
Good point. Good point. Yes. Well, you know, I feel like Prezra is probably like, you know, do you know that thing from Arrested Development where Lucille Bluth is like, how much could, I forget what it is, but it's something like, how much could like bananas cost? $100 or something like that. Like, I feel like that's how Prezra operates. Like, he doesn't know what money is. He doesn't know what things cost. He's been rich his entire life.
Well, also, note that his apartment in Rosewood is also a studio, right? Because his bed is like right there in the living room that Arya was sitting at. So like, obviously he's just like the kind of guy who doesn't want there to be like, he wants his bed to be like out in the one room that you have to be in if you're coming over to his place. Which I think is not on accident.
He wants you to know where the night's going to end, for sure. Yeah.
You know, people in the Jane Austen community, like, they write whole articles on like the economy of Jane Austen and like what character probably had more money than another character. I wish there was a similar outlet for like me to write an article about the economy of Rosewood, because I have so many thoughts on it.
If you write that article, I will read it and promote it. And maybe even some of our listeners will too.
Oh my goodness. Okay, at Prezra's creepy cabin in the woods, Prezra gets up to find that Arya has made coffee and wants to go home. She didn't sleep well and is tired of lying to everyone. He spins this into some truly amazing levels of bullshit, claiming that her feeling this distance from her friends is actually just the two of them growing closer, and how that's so important if they're going to make it. He needs to be the person that she's closest to and shares everything with, and she needs to be that for him. Ugh, and oh gosh, did he pressure her? He's so sorry. He'll just take a shower and then drive her home if she still wants to go. Maybe bringing her up here and them starting over was a big mistake. Wow, all of that gaslighting and somehow the cabin does not explode, but my brain might. Aria falls for it hook, line, and sinker and is sure that she does want this to work. Now, just note the way that he's operating here. Like, she could want them to be in a relationship but still feel like she needs to go home now instead of being at this cabin all weekend. And also, like, no is a complete thought by itself. I want to go back now is a complete thought of itself. Like, she is not saying, like, I think that we've made a terrible mistake. She's not saying, I think you're a bad person. She's just saying, like, right now, the right thing for me is to be somewhere other than here. But he's not engaging with her about, like, her feeling on that. He wants to, like, turn it into, he wants to turn everything into a referendum on, do you want to be with me, your star-crossed destined lover, or not? And she's, like, not there yet to, like, find the strength to be, like, actually not. Like, I will choose not if that is what you're making this into.
Well, and, you know, you have pointed out that one of the things that's been so satisfying about this arc is that we're getting to see Prezra pull all the same moves we've always seen him pull, but now it's being framed as creepy. And this is completely that. You know, this conversation of, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put pressure on you. Like, he said some version of that to her 1,000 times, and now we're finally seeing it framed as the gross manipulation tactic that it has always been. It's like there have always been these red flags, but he isn't, you know, the show isn't tucking them away anymore. The manipulation tactics, the abuse tactics, it's like he's teaching a master class here. And, you know, we just see how he is further and further isolating her from her friends, from her family, you know, creating this literal space of isolation for them in the woods. And, you know, I think also that possibility that he is trying to kind of not only groom her so he can control her as his girlfriend, but potentially as his a teammate, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 110%. Like, the way that he is, we talk about, like, when people draw the circles and who's inside and who's outside. What he's doing here is, like, so nefarious because he's drawing a circle where it's like, you and I are inside and everybody else is not important. Everybody else should fall away.
Right. Yes. And also this sort of idea of, like, because they're, so much of their relationship is about their shared interests, or at least the interests that he has encouraged her to explore. And there definitely is this vibe of, like, nobody else could possibly understand you, quirky little Aria, the way that I do. You shall be my manic pixie dream girl in my little snow globe.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. And no one else is.
Yeah. It is creepy. In town, Hannah sees a very jumpy Spencer sort of stomping down the sidewalk very single-mindedly. Hannah corners her and interrogates her about what's going on, what's wrong, why is she lying, while Gabe inexplicably watches in the background. Hannah calls Spencer out on all of her constant lies, finally just saying to her, lying! Like, that's all. And when she tries to grab Spencer's arm, Spencer snaps, asking Hannah to back off. Gabe approaches, asking if Spencer is always like that. He apparently heard that Spencer was the level-headed one, which I want to know where you get your info from, Gabe. Spencer Hastings is many things, but level-headed is not a word I would use to describe her. Also, does he think they're exes, asking for a friend?
Oh, I mean, they definitely are giving off that energy, don't you think? Like, especially because there's like the dance of the language and the physical dance between them as Hannah is like Spencer is trying to physically maneuver around her and Hannah keeps like stepping in front. And also just the contrast of like Hannah, who is like strolling down the street like a person who is casually out on a Saturday, and Spencer like storming around like completely absorbed in her like inner like inner monologue about the investigation to the point that she's like not aware of Hannah. She's not aware of Holbrook. She's not aware of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great like physical scene for the two of them for sure. And there's this really interesting thing going on in this episode because later we're going to see pictures from many of these moments. And so it's like, there's almost this like extra element of theatricality to a lot of the movements in this episode because they have to like register for the photos that Prezzer is going to see later.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Man, this is a really good scene between them. And I do love it when Hannah is just like not letting it go. Like a lot of times yes. We call Spencer a dog with a bone, but here's Hannah. She knows something is wrong and she is not just going to let it continue to slide.
Right. Right. Well, I really wish that somebody would name check the Radley Toby situation. It's kind of bizarre to me that nobody brings that up. Nobody says like, look what happened last time. And maybe that comes up later in the storyline. I don't really remember, but it's like, you know, like they have very real reasons to not want to back off when they feel like Spencer is slipping away from them.
Also, it's like Toby doesn't even exist in this episode. Nobody even mentions him. Nobody tries to contact him. Like he's just a complete non-entity here.
It's very strange. I agree.
But yeah, when Holbrook mentioned Spencer being level-headed, that's when I was like, okay, is he trying to like, because Hannah kind of says like, yeah, normally she is. So like Hannah is like sort of, I'm not going to say tricked, but like because of the situation, Hannah reveals information about another liar to the police, which normally I think she would be a lot more like having her guard up about doing.
True. Good point. Good point.
oh, man. So now Emily is looking under the bed in Allison's room. We're meant to think it's for the poster, but really she's on a fake search for an allegedly missing diamond earring that she borrowed from her mom without permission and has now like lost in the De Laurentiis house. Bit of a hat on a hat here, Emily. Anyway, she gets Jessica to go and search the guest bedroom, or no, I'm sorry, the guest bathroom, while Emily, who clearly has, like, not thought out this caper, takes the poster down off the wall and pierces the backing to find an envelope. She checks and sees that the envelope is full of $100 bills and some contact info that includes two email addresses and a phone number. She stuffs the envelope into her pocket or like into the waistband of her shorts, not sure, and then puts the poster back on the wall just in time to declare that the earring has been found.
Yeah, it seems like the one part of this caper that Emily thought out was like actually having the earring in hand.
Yes, so good, like props to her for that.
Yes.
But also like at the point when she's putting the poster back up on the wall, like Emily is wearing like short little shorts and like not a very long shirt. So I do kind of think like, hey, what's that bulky envelope in your pocket that wasn't there before? Could be a question that someone might be asking her as she tries to like spirit this out of the home.
Agreed. Also, this is Mrs. D's one scene in the episode. She has like maybe three lines and they're all so good. Like the way she's like, and now your mother never has to know what was missing. Like it's just, it's very... It's that line between maternal and ominous.
100% agree. Especially because, like, we've been getting a lot of parents, like, Arya will mention Byron. He's always teaching in Syracuse. And, like, Hannah is going to do, like, the invisible Mrs. Hastings routine later in this episode. But, like, this is, like, a moment where we are actually getting to see one of the parents. And it's she makes a lot of use of the little screen time she has.
Agreed. Completely. Yeah, there are a lot of like invisible parents in this episode. Oh man, this scene. I just feel like this is one of those scenes where it's like maybe Prezria are made for each other because they are just... Arya returns home from a walk taking pictures to find Prezria making vegetable tagine with chickpeas. A night in Tunisia so exotic. She says, oh, Arya, like that is so Arya. But lo, he has forgotten the chickpeas. She offers to drive to Seymour's, which is apparently a shop an hour away, to get some more and also to take some pictures of a covered bridge while she's there. I feel like this is like full on Stockholm syndrome, because it's like he can trust her to leave because he knows she's not going to go home. You know, he knows she's going to come back. She goes and he opens the cabinet and the music gets all loud as we learn that there are, in fact, chickpeas, evil chickpeas. Prezra takes the can of chickpeas with him as he opens the hatch in the floor and goes down into his creepy surveillance basement. He sits at his computer and he finds an email that has all of these pictures of the liars from this entire episode. Emily, Hannah, Spencer, Arya. Oh, it is effective. I will give it that. And it is also spectacularly creepy.
It sure is. Also, man, this dude acting like, yes, I'm making a vegetable to, you know, with, like, he's basically saying he's making a vegetable dish for his vegetarian girlfriend and acting like he wants a medal for it. Like, oh, how kind you are to make a food that your partner can, you know, eat.
Like, yeah.
What a jerk. But also, I want to point out that as he's looking at these pictures, it includes one of Emily fussing with the envelope in plain view outside the brew. So once again, Emily is just not cut out for a career in espionage.
Nope. Nope. Not one of her finest skills.
Speaking of, I like the look that we get of the lair, like the lair setup that he has. Yeah. With the multiple computer monitors and the maps and all of his like obsessive material. Plus like the way that it's like dark and down the stairs. And like when he's going down the stairs, you're like, oh my God, does he have like Allison chained up down there? Like you don't know.
And it's also, there's something extra creepy about the fact that he's in like casual clothes while he's doing all of this. Like he's in like shorts and like a baggy sweatshirt, and that somehow makes it grosser in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Oh, Emily, you sweet little lamb. She's at work at the brew on the phone with Shauna about the $5,000 she found in the poster. Which she was not supposed to look at, probably because she would then act exactly as she is now, just completely freaking out about it. Shauna is at a swim meet and cannot come immediately. I'm not really sure why Emily can't ditch work like she always does. Yes. That's not explained. But Emily has been keeping the envelope in the pocket of her apron, but then, for no reason, decides to open a bag of coffee beans and hide it in there under the counter. This is absurd. If it's in your apron pocket, it's literally on your person. It's going to be like way harder for someone to steal or to discover accidentally.
Agreed. Yeah, it is a shocking choice. And I had totally forgotten that the money doesn't get stolen in this episode, because it absolutely seems like it should.
Yeah, it's very similar to, like, the International Bank of Lasagna that the Marins use. Like, this is, like, yes. The Bank of Coffee Beans.
Exactly. So Hannah is leaving a message for Veronica asking for Spencer, who isn't answering her cell. Hannah lies, saying that she needs to get some nail polish of Spencer, or she needs to get some nail polish that Spencer borrowed, and asks if she can stop by. Meanwhile, I'll just say this because it's very quick. Shauna goes to get into her car and gasps/screams. Seemingly somebody is in the car with her.
Hannah gets to Spencer's room and rummages around on her computer, quickly determining that Spencer suspects Prezra of being A. She reads an email from the property management company refusing to give Spencer info about the Ravenswood Lair rental. And then Hannah, like, has seen enough. She knows what Spencer's up to, and she leaves in a hurry.
Yes, and then over at Prezra's apartment, where Spencer has seemingly been staking out for a while and possibly planning a break-in, Spencer goes over to the call pad and just starts hitting all of the numbers until she is gained entry. And just as she's about to walk in, Hannah shows up. Hannah knows her girl and tells Spencer to not go through with it. Hannah announces that Spencer has to be on drugs if she thinks Prezra is A. Little on the nose there, Hannah. Hannah says, without any ounce of remorse, that she looked through Hannah's computer, or looked through Spencer's computer, and Spencer rambles through her explanation of Allie's story and how it ties into Prezra, sounding rather unhinged as she talks about the heart and the huntsman and board shorts ale. Hannah wonders what if Spencer is connecting the wrong dots, but Spencer invites her to come inside and they go in together.
I love this scene. I love the way that they're interacting this whole episode and just how well Hannah knows Spencer in order to do this intervention right here.
Well, I also love, I feel like so often the dynamic between the two of them is that, like, Spencer, by virtue of the fact that, like, she's, you know, more conventionally smart and has more money and is sort of generally seems to be more put together. Like, Spencer often seems to sort of, like, have the power in this relationship. And I like here that, like, Spencer is the one falling apart and Hannah is sort of, like, the put together one who has to decide whether she's kind of going to, like, take a chance on this renegade, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that, like, Hannah just is so smart in this episode and she's like, yeah, really, like, she's able to reason with Spencer in a way that we don't often see characters like, and like you said, Spencer listens to Hannah here. I mean, yeah, granted they both kind of see the video camera and then back off, but like, Spencer doesn't barge ahead. Spencer, like, and it looks like, I mean, when Prezra is looking at this on the tablet, it looks like Hannah has just convinced Spencer not to go through with this.
Right. Because Prezra is in the car checking on all the cameras, including footage of his sleeping naked girlfriend, by the way, before landing on the pictures of Spanna at the apartment. Spencer says that she's been watching all day. He hasn't been in or out. She starts looking for the key while telling Hannah that she thinks that the Ravenswood apartment is Prezra's. Hannah realizes how serious she is, then points out that he wouldn't keep anything tying him to Ravenswood here. Spencer spies a camera watching them from a grate in the floor. Prezra mutters, "Walk away, Spencer." And like you said, Spencer announces that she's wrong, kind of performing for the cameras while telling Hannah about the camera, you know, sort of loudly saying, "I don't even know what I was thinking," as they walk away.
Yeah, this is really, like, this is really, really something. It's a great scene. They're, like, right there on the edge of going into his apartment. And, like, what do you think would happen? Do you think he would call the police?
Oh, I think he might. Or he might have some kind of, like, weird booby trap set up in the apartment. Who knows?
Or he would use this to blackmail them. Like, I have footage of you breaking into my apartment. You could get in so much trouble if, you know, if anyone were to find out. Like, it's just limitless. It's limitless what he could do.
I wonder if there's a world in which he would try, maybe this is my fanfic brain taking over, but a world in which he would try to, like, frame it as, like, oh, you, like, are you girls, like, having a secret relationship or something? I'm going to tell
Art. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
You know, and then they have to do the secret relationship thing to cover for it. And it's a whole thing.
Oh, man.
this whole era is so, like, I feel like the possibilities of the relationships are just so ripe. Like, there's just so much that you could spin off into a different thing, you know?
Yeah. And there's so much, like, there's so much energy just moving between all of them here.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Oh, man. So Arya, who was last seen sleeping naked on the camera that Prezra has over her bed in the cabin. So, like, you know that we've seen them, that they hooked up in the cabin before. So he just has, like, footage of them having sex. Like, you know, just, like, in a full-on Aaron Eccles way. Anyway, Arya wakes up in the cabin alone. She goes on a search for Prezra, calling out to him repeatedly as the suspenseful music and creaky door sounds mount. I would like to note that this is not a particularly large cabin, so the fact that he is not, like, immediately in view is a bit weird. And also, I like the way that this, you know, it's kind of extended, like, her going from area to area looking for him, and being kind of scared, even though he is her partner, who she's there with. And it's this nice, like, ominous note of, like, is she scared to find him or not to find him? Like, what, you know, what's the deal here? And at any rate, he appears behind her, startling her, and then apologizes that he did not mean to scare her.
Yeah. Is this where they have the conversation about where she's, like, worried about him and...
Yeah, the next thing that happens is, like, she's like, where were you? And he gives her a tale of, like, he needed to lock the back door and he was having trouble sleeping. And, gosh, she was so right that they shouldn't lie anymore. He's just so glad she stayed. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, what a master manipulator he is. He is just, like, almost every conversation that they have in this episode, like, she's coming at it from, like, a place of, like, I don't want to do this thing, or this thing has made me uncomfortable. And he's just talking her out of that instinct every single time.
Well, to the point where it's like, she is so needing to reassure him in this moment. Like, I'm not having doubts. I'm not worried. Like, were you, like, she's worried that he's worried. She's worried that she's made him worry. You know, it's he is playing some incredible head games. And it, you know, it's funny because it's like, we give Arya a hard time a lot for, you know, the way that she acts or the way that she prioritizes Prezra, but it's like, he's been pulling this shit their whole relationship, you know. It's like, no wonder.
And it seems like when you look back at him doing it, he's behaving just like one of the regular boyfriends. Like, all of the boyfriends, to a greater or lesser extent. And Caleb, although he is very controlling, I will give him a pass and say he does not gaslight in the way that Toby and Prezra do. But it's like, it's relationship strategies that are not, like, outside what you see in regular life, which is what makes this, like, so creepy and so disturbing.
Yeah, I was watching a somewhat recent episode of SVU recently that was making me think a lot about Prezria, because it's about these three women that they mutilate this former teacher of theirs who got them, who basically was a Prezria. He was, like, their poetry teacher, and he manipulated each of them into sexual relationships with him. And man, the parallels of, like, you know, you're so mature, your writing is so, and it's like, it's just about how you frame it, right? It's like, do you frame it as a romance or do you frame it as a horror story, you know?
A great, great open question. And unfortunately, PLL, like, here they're experimenting with the horror story, and it really sucks that they come down on the side of the romance in the end.
It really does. It really does. So Hannah and Spencer are revealing all of the latest new information to Emily, who wonders if the building could have put the camera up, but Spencer points out that it was hidden and sketchy as hell. Could Prezra be A, they wonder? Emily and Hannah point out the times that he has seemingly been there for him, but Spencer brings up the fact that he was probably trying to get close to them so they would let their guard down. I love that they're letting the characters name this and that they're letting the characters get there so quickly. They wonder if they should call Arya, but they decide not yet. Hannah's head is full of hot ice cubes. Emily shows them the cash for Allison, which is shockingly still in the bag. But Shauna never showed, she says. Allie is running out of money, and Shauna is seemingly the only one who knows how to reach her. They wonder if Prezra could have snagged Shauna to get to Allison. I really appreciate how not only are they moving quickly on the Prezria or on the Prezra storyline here, but also that they're not doing a thing of, like, Emily keeping the whole Shauna interaction from the liars. You know, there's been a lot of the liars lying to each other recently, and I like that. But I also like that it's like, okay, we're all on the same page here. We're all understand kind of what the new stakes are, what needs to happen, what Allison needs. Like, it feels good to have some of that out in the open.
I agree. It gives it a sense of momentum for sure. But yes, the liars, like, okay, so Shauna did not come and pick up the money at the Brew, which is weird because she did say that she was going to, but the liars immediately make the leap to, like, oh no, Shauna's been taken. which she has been, but I don't really feel like they have enough evidence to get to that point from where they are.
Agreed, especially because, like, Shauna is not, has never been, like, an incredibly, like, reliable figure, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. And because she might be waiting for further instructions from Allie. Like, that would, and we don't even get, like, Emily saying, like, I've been trying to call her and her cell phone has been destroyed. Like, you know, we don't even really get that. She's just like, Shauna didn't show up. Maybe she's dead. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's... Like, moving on. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little weird.
Oh, so speaking of, you know, speaking of this whole Shauna situation, they think that Prezzer may have taken Shauna in the hopes that she'll lead him back to Allison. Allison herself is at a payphone again calling Shauna. We see that Shauna's cell is ringing and it kind of rouses her. It wakes her up. She is passed out in the front seat of her car and disoriented. She takes the call, and Allison presses her about the money. Meanwhile, Shauna is not sure where exactly she is. The headlights of her car go on, and she's in front of the sign at the city limits saying that you're now leaving Rosewood. There's a red scrawl that changes the normally friendly message to read, don't come back again. Shauna tells Allie that she has to go. She has to hang up now. She is really shaken up because this is kind of similar to what happened to Hannah last week. Like, A has, like, you know, gassed her, has knocked her out, has put her in, like, a really vulnerable situation where she doesn't know exactly what happened. And now the message is really clear. They want her to leave town. Shauna tells Allie she's got to go. She hangs up the phone. Allison seems increasingly frantic about the money, but Shauna hangs up anyway and drops her cell phone out the window of the car as she drives off into the night.
Yeah, this is a very effectively creepy moment, and I feel like Shauna, as a Black queer woman too, it's especially unnerving for her to see this don't come back, you know, don't come back to this creepy little town where, like, Black queer women get killed a lot, you know, like, it's very creepy. I understand Shauna needing to get out of there.
Yeah, it's extremely menacing, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, it's really effective. So Allie, fresh out of leads on this cash situation, kind of paws through the remaining cash in her wallet. She leaves the phone booth and walks over to a bus. We see that there are this bus goes to multiple places. We don't see where exactly Allie is going, but she gets on the bus as some mournful music plays, looking very small and very alone. It's quite sad.
It is really sad. I am going to mention that similar to, like, in the scene where the Hastings adopt Spencer from Radley, and it's like all of a sudden it's the 1940s in their car, like, Allison for a weird reason is at this bus station that's like the bus station of the 1950s. Like, yes. she's carrying, like, a suitcase or a bag that has, like, a handle on it instead of wheels, and she's, like, wearing this, she's wearing this, like, you know, dress that's, like, kind of from a post-war style, and the bus station, like, the letters of bus are, it's just all very, like, it's all very much, like, she's a runaway in a totally different era.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we did see the bus that Caleb was on to get to Ravenswood, and that was a pretty old-timey seeming bus. So maybe that's just, like, how buses work in Rosewood and Ravenswood.
Oh, maybe.
Like, you get transported back in time.
I could definitely see that. I hope that Allison does not meet any ghosts.
I hope not. I hope not. And gets pulled into an unwitting chip caper.
Indeed.
Yeah, and then we go to the H tag.
Yes. Do you want to take us into?
Sure. So the A tag, A is watching a black and white movie and has just received some Ren Kingston prescription pads.
Yes, and the movie that A is watching here, it's Dark Passage, and it's a Bogie and Bacall movie, and I think that is, like, kind of the lead in to the fact that next week's episode, of course, is Shadow Play.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe it. We've arrived. We've arrived at Shaggy. Oh,
we have. We've like come to the top of the mountain. The best episode of the series is up next, and I just can't wait.
I can't wait either. I mean, we will talk about this for sure, but there is definitely the question of should the series have ended here? I mean, there is a world in which it feels like the series could be kind of chugging towards an end game. We know that Allison is alive. The circumstances are shifting so that she should be able to come home soon. Prezra is seeming more and more like the definitive A. And it, you know, the question I think that we will be kind of asking over the next several weeks is like, is this when things should have been wrapping up?
I mean, it would have been a far stronger ending, I think. It would have been the strongest possible ending that we really get. And we'll talk about it more. But yeah, this run of episodes is just so good. And the fact that Caleb is gone and the fact that Toby isn't around very much, it's really allowing the Liars to operate as a unit and just not get bogged down in all of the relationship drama.
Yeah, it's a much their core connections and their core kind of connections to the mystery feel a lot stronger here. Yeah, and it's something we'll talk about. You know, are there things that come after that make it worth it that the show went on as long as it did? I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. Maybe there are moments here or there. But yeah, that was hot for teacher.
Quite an episode. I mean, another really strong entry. A lot of great work going on within the Liar dynamic, particularly with Spencer and Hannah and also Spencer and Aria. And once again, we're in a situation where all of the Liars have something to do, which is so crucial to like making an episode, like really making it fire on all cylinders. Like every Liar has a particular plot line that is like driving the momentum for them.
Yeah. Yeah, the momentum is a great word for this time period. Like, there's just so much momentum in these episodes. You can tell that everybody was, like, having fun, you know, which is not something that I would necessarily say about some of the latter series episodes. Yeah, it's just a good time. It's just a really good time.
Well, and it must be more fun if you're, you know, if you're playing Prezra. It's way more fun to be the villain and to have, like, all of these layers to your performance than to just be having, like, another soggy installment of the same conversation that you always have with
Agreed.
Aria.
Agreed. It's yes, it's so much more interesting. It's so much more interesting, for sure. Do we have anything more that we would like to say about this
episode? No, okay. This was a great one, and I cannot wait until next week to just go all in on Shadow Play.
Oh my God. Prepare for like a 3-hour episode, everybody. if you have thoughts on Hot for Teacher, or if you have, you know, any pre-gaming thoughts about Shadow Play, you can of course send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast, or send in a rating review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We will of course be back next week with Shadow Play. And we'll also note, if you are dying to hear our thoughts on Happiest Season, never fear. We will be doing a little Christmas episode before the holidays. So you can prepare for that. We'll be chatting about a few different queer sort of holiday adjacent properties. So, yeah. But next week, we will be going to Black and White Town for Shadow Play. So until then.
Take care.